Welcome to Tracks Cultures. I'm Mike Piccinato, your host. This podcast unravels the intricacies of transitions across cultures. For those feeling the pull of change or supporting loved ones through it, this podcast is for you. We understand the uncertainty and excitement that come with such transitions, and together we'll explore how to adapt while maintaining community and belonging. Throughout our episodes, we'll draw on insights from the Cross-Cultural Transition Handbook by Dr. Stephen W. Jones. Whether you're moving to a new place or supporting someone who is, this podcast offers encouragement and connection. Enjoy the conversations as we navigate the challenges and joys of cross-cultural transitions together. Hey there, this is Mike, and you're about to hear a never-before-released conversation from December of 2022, Stephen and Jenny Jones' second Christmas in Berlin. I had just come back to Berlin from my last home assignment, and we were trying to get back into podcasting, an effort that was really not all that successful at the time. And so this recording has been sitting untouched for 2.5 years. I didn't know how I would feel about editing it and releasing it, but I think the themes that we talk about hold up really well. And it's a really important part of continuing to keep records of the Jones' ongoing cultural transition in Berlin. So I've edited the podcast, decided not to divide it into two episodes, which means it's a little bit longer of a listen than normal, but I'm confident that you will find it worth the extra time. Well, Stephen and Jenny, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hi.
It has been a long time since we've recorded.
It has been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've recorded.
Here in this studio.
Here in the studio here, period. Coming back from being on home assignment. The re-entry was much more time intensive than I think I was originally anticipating. So now we're trying to get back to restoring some kind of balance so I get to do the ministries that I enjoy instead of just the ministries that have to be done.
That's a thing, isn't it?
It really is. And so I'm really excited that we're able to sit down and record again. The topic this time, last year we talked about some of the new holiday traditions that you guys were experiencing and witnessing just 6 months in. Mm-hmm. And now you're a little closer to 18 months in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so the holiday traditions aren't maybe as shocking, although there's probably still some ongoing, why can't I find nativity scene shocks that one experiences.
Or a band that wasn't in your neighborhood last year that marches down the street this year. That was new.
Well, that's fun.
So yeah, it was new.
But we came across, as we do our morning prayer tradition 3 mornings a week, we came across something that I don't think any of us had really heard before, something coming out of the Celtic tradition of 3 different colors of martyrdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. That was new to me.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I did a little bit of research, and apparently it's older than just Celtic Christianity. It goes back to Jerome and Gregory wrote about these 3 different colors of martyrdom as well. And the 3 colors are red, green, and white.
Oh, Christmas colors.
Christmas colors. The red martyrdom is what we traditionally think of when we think of martyrdom. It's when somebody gives their life for their faith. And I think that's, whether it's Fox's Book of Martyrs or DC Talk's Jesus Freaks, stories that we're familiar with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when we think of martyrdom, we think of somebody generally actually giving their physical life. Mm-hmm. According to old Christian tradition, there was a green martyrdom. And this originally represented Christians who took Jesus' command to take up his cross daily and follow him. So this giving of their life and following Jesus in daily life was the green martyrdom, sometimes blue, strangely enough.
Interesting.
And then the white martyrdom was originally for people that went off onto temporary or long periods of spiritual retreat.
Kind of like pilgrimage or like...
Yeah, that would have been considered more of a white martyrdom or times of silence. Mm-hmm. Or mm-hmm. If you think of the desert fathers, people going off into the deserts for longer times. Mm-hmm. That morphed a little bit in Celtic Christianity, which fascinates me. This version of Christianity that developed independently from the Roman church. Mm-hmm. And that has a lot to do with history too, because the Romans brought Christianity originally to England, and then when the Romans left England, there was this separation between the Church of Rome and the Christians that were then in England and Ireland and other parts of the British Isles. And so it developed kind of independently. And green martyrdom then became what white martyrdom was. The green martyrdom became those that went off on spiritual retreats or decided to fast for a while. So a period of Lent would be a green martyrdom time. And white martyrdom was for those who sailed off into the white morning. Like the first missionaries that went to Ireland were considered to be the white martyrs then.
Interesting. Mm.
And so in Celtic Christianity, this white martyrdom began to characterize more this kind of missions work that we think of now. And among Celtic Christians, then this white martyrdom became the highest form of martyrdom, which as we're approaching holidays, I think is interesting for us to talk about because it's, again, a season of time where we are apart from family and developing new traditions and kind of wrestling with what does it mean for us to be in a new place, developing new traditions. In my bad moments, I have a martyr's complex and think about how terrible my life is. But I don't know that I wake up on a daily basis. In fact, I know I don't wake up on a daily basis thinking, boy, I'm really suffering for the gospel here in Germany. Mm-hmm. How do you guys experience a year and a half in? Things are obviously a little different, but do you think of your life, your life on mission in a different country as a martyrdom in any way?
I haven't before. I think as I think about it, my initial feeling is martyrdom feels like this, the ultimate, again, sort of, you know, like you explained that red martyrdom, it's the ultimate sacrifice. And so everything else pales in comparison. So it's not a sacrifice, it's just life. But I think, yeah, as you were talking, thinking about, and even some things I've been processing recently about the sacrificialness of Christ's calling in our lives. So I think I've been in the process of thinking about it differently, but the word martyrdom, it still struggles to get into my, like that's something I'm involved in.
I think it's interesting, you know, even just thinking through kind of the normal process of transition. I think a year ago when we were 6 months in, everything was still pretty exciting and interesting, you know, and doing things for the first time. I think now, a year later, I think like Jenny, I don't know that I would gravitate toward the word martyrdom, but there is more of a sense, I think, of dying to self that I think now that some of the shine has worn off, as it should, right? That there is more of a sense of like, okay, yeah, no, this is a, I have to choose to live into that dying to self. And I think maybe where that differs from, like, because that was also true before we came here, but I think there are things that are different about the way that looks here. So yeah, I think it resonates with me more in this year than it would have a year ago. Mm. Yeah, although it's probably not the word that I would run to describe my daily living experience.
But I think it's a super interesting thought to spend some time on, because we've talked in the office, and I know other people have talked about it as well, this idea of the cruciform lifestyle and how often that seems to be missing, especially in a prosperity gospel mindset where, you know, it's, you follow Christ for everything you're going to get and how much better your life is going to be. And instead, this invitation to follow Christ in his death is something that was certainly a hallmark of the early church. And I think it was even Bonhoeffer that said, you know, a call to follow Christ is a call to die. Mm-hmm. And so there's this invitation to die that's certainly a part, dying to self, that's certainly a part of what God has called us to do. Mm-hmm. And so I do like this mindset of, hey, there is a green martyrdom. Mm-hmm. This daily sacrifice to Christ that is a part of what we're called to live to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as we were reading that, I was like, wait, that's like every believer. Like that's what we're like, he calls us to sacrifice ourselves for the sake of others, that they may know him, that they may feel his healing and redemption as well. And so yeah, like it just makes sense in that way.
I even think of the Philippians 2 invitation that Paul is writing out as he's describing how Christ has made himself, taking on human flesh and coming to dwell among us. And especially here in the Christmas season, as we're remembering the incarnate nature of what God did for us, how he took on human flesh and came to dwell among us, there was a dying to self that he had to experience as well. And I think we overlook that sometimes, the importance of all of us as Christians dying to self. It's not that a life isn't being lived. It's mm-hmm. maybe just not our life mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. being lived.
Right, Christ mm-hmm. in you. Yeah.
And I do think that takes on some different cues when you're talking about that taking place in a place that's so far away from where you're comfortable living. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to dwell on how amazing our sacrifice is, because that's not the point of talking about this idea of martyrdom. But there is a reason I want to talk about the work we do in martyrdom. And it's not so much for us, but for other people as well who are experiencing some of those challenges of how do I live this life that I feel God's called me to away from the people I want to be living my life with. So what are some of the things that you guys feel maybe more poignantly around the Christmas season or around holiday season?
I think Thanksgiving a year ago was relatively easy. We didn't necessarily do a lot of Thanksgiving stuff in the most recent years before we came here. Kind of had our normal pattern that we had developed into a home, and in part because of where it fit in the semester, we didn't do a lot of traveling the last few years before we came here over Thanksgiving. And so not being with family wasn't necessarily so different. But this year it was hard. And I don't know. I think maybe, you know, whereas a year ago we were, you know, deep into the Stollen and other Christmas goodies, and, you know, the Christmas markets were popping up, and, you know, there was all this stuff that we were experiencing for the first time that was really a welcome distraction from some of the sadness of not being with people. Whereas this year it was more kind of the feeling of like, oh, yeah, we're not going to see those people again this year for Thanksgiving or Christmas. And how much longer will that be? And what else will we miss out on because of that? And kind of looking at what feels sometimes, yeah, like it feels like the impossibility even of getting there over Christmas. And some of that has to do with kids' school schedules here and the way that time off from school is viewed, and, you know, just different things like that that, you know, beside the financial piece of it, just make it feel really less possible than I probably had imagined that it would feel. So I think Thanksgiving is when that started to settle in this year, was this feeling of like, yeah, we are giving something up to be here, and it's not clear that we'll have it back in any kind of a familiar way soon or maybe ever because of the disruption of patterns and relationships, and even just, you know, people moving or dying, you know. Yeah.
And we had more people here this year, and so even to do something the same, because sometimes I think that's what Thanksgiving feels like. You're like, oh, we can do the same thing every year, and it just, there's a good feeling about that. I think that's something we had before we moved here. And so this year was even different than last Thanksgiving. So there was this sense of like, oh, we have new people, which feels exciting, but there's also like, yeah, just the pain of, oh, what does it look like to celebrate with them? We don't quite know. We're sort of feeling each other out, and we enjoy these people, but do we holiday with them? I think so. But yet there's still this struggle of loss of something that we can't quite put our fingers on at the same time as we're gaining relationship and goodness and all of that, that there was a sense of pain with the difference of celebrating this year.
Yeah, there is something disrupting about instability. Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems like such an obvious thing to say, mm-hmm. though, doesn't it? I mean, of course, instability is disruptive, but with especially with our calling to Envision, we've embraced a sense of instability because mm-hmm. we're constantly working with people who are here for a short period of time, mm-hmm. which is great. And we love being a part of their lives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like you said, I enjoy them as people, and yeah, and they're interesting, and I love learning about them and what they, you know, different traditions. We did a fun activity where there was different questions on the table and you, you know, ask your partner, what books would you enjoy or what, I mean, just, yeah, random things. But it's like, yeah, it's really interesting to hear different people's perspectives. But yet at the same time, it didn't feel like the comfortable, well, now I've eaten so much, I'm going to unbutton my pants. And like, it wasn't like that level of like, now I'm wearing sweatpants in the afternoon versus your party clothes or whatever. Like there was a sense of like, what do I do here? I'm not sure.
Yeah, like you have to stay on, right?
And for one of our family, that's easier than the other four of us. Yeah.
Well, and it was different because we weren't doing it in a home. None of our homes would have been big enough to hold everybody. So we did it at our new space. And even that is a different experience, right? You're not...
Yeah. I think we're even like, well, what are we going to do when we're done eating? And we had a lot of fun and there was some good things. But there was like, oh, now what's next?
No couches. There's no carpet to lay on. You know, there's all the things that I would kind of normally go to after a Thanksgiving meal. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think also this year, we didn't get, so Thanksgiving, of course, is not a holiday here. And I felt the lack of what that week feels like. You know, in the college setting, often we would only have 2 days of class that week. And those would be pretty light feeling days, because a lot of people would have already left, whether or not they were supposed to have, you know, like, yeah, that week was a very peaceful week in a lot of ways, and it wasn't here. It was a work week. We had a family visiting from the national office, which was great to spend time with him, but it was definitely an on week and a work week. And yeah, and then even that this Thanksgiving gathering was not in any way a break from work. It was a continuation, you know, interacting with the same people, you know, and yeah, whether you call it ministry or work or whatever, it's still, there's this sense of, I need to be here with these people. And family, I think, feels that way sometimes too. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that I really love about the holidays is this kind of pulling out of the normal patterns. And I'd say that's something that I felt the lack of this time.
I think there's a couple of things to that. One, when you're visiting family, you know their quirks a little bit, right? You're going to be like, okay, well,
prepare
Jim's going to tell the funny jokes and Bob's going to try, you know, but you kind of, you know what you're preparing for. But with us, with new people that we don't really know, we have no clue what's going to happen. There's part of that. And then there's and I think this is common for organizations like ours around the world, where suddenly you have this weird dynamic where your coworkers are also your replacement family. And there's just it's just strange sometimes.
Yeah. And again, it's like, I personally enjoy all the people I work with, all of our interns and our resident, I enjoy them. But then it's like, oh, that distinction between a work relationship and a not work relationship starts to get fuzzy. And you're like, well, I don't think I'm working right now, but it sort of feels like it. So what am I doing again? When am I like off?
I don't think I'm working, but I have to be here.
Right.
Well, and especially with our desire to try to create a family atmosphere for our interns and for our residents. And that's really an important part of what we do. And they're all away from their family too. Mm-hmm. And so we want to create traditions that feel familiar. But yeah, you're right. There's not only are you missing your own family, you're trying to figure out what is my relationship to the people here, and expectations are difficult to navigate in that.
I think another piece that's interesting for us as we go into this holiday season is I wouldn't say we're done with the major transition process yet. I'd say we're probably toward the end of the neutral zone, but it means that we don't really have our feet under us yet. And so I think, you know, being here so much longer in some ways than the rest of the people that we're celebrating with, not everybody, but almost everybody else that we're celebrating Thanksgiving with, we've been here much longer than. And on the other hand, we are feeling, you know, still very much in the transition. It makes it, for me at least, it makes it difficult to extend hospitality to other people when I still am trying to figure out who am I in this place and yeah, what is my... Even to some extent, what is my role and what is my identity? Like some of those things that make it much easier to be hospitable from, I don't feel like I have yet.
And I think we'll definitely come back to this in an episode or two all on its own. But I think another part of that is you guys are entering or kind of leaving the neutral zone, which is disruptive. Mm-hmm. But that figuring out who I am is equally disruptive, if not more so.
Right. Yeah. And both the question of who am I now and who am I still are two different questions. Yeah. Which is that's probably one or two separate episodes there. But yeah, not having those things settled means that even some of the friendly conversation, or even some of the little, you know, the little questions that were on the table don't always feel safe. Like there were a couple of them where I was like, I actually can't answer that. Like that wouldn't be a safe question for me to answer right now. Which is just interesting, you know, mm-hmm. just something that was clearly intended for fun. And I was like, whoa, you know? Yeah.
And added to all of this is this layer of, so we use something called the DASI to kind of try to keep our organization fairly level and to assign responsibilities out. But the challenge of that with me being gone for 4 months mm-hmm. and then coming back is also figuring out, as we're entering into the holiday season, what are our roles? And so there's this added disruption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things just not being settled. Where last year we sort of knew where we fit, we knew where things were. And this year it's like, oh, things are, I mean, we know more. We have a few more things figured out. We can navigate things better with a little more ease. Comfortable engaging stuff on our own or finding solutions to the problems we have, but yet still trying to figure out, oh, what things do we want to do? I mean, the kids are, we haven't got a tree yet, and we feel the loss of the day after Thanksgiving, setting up the tree that we did before. We, again, felt that harder this year. And so it's been harder to think about, oh, I mean, last year we got a tree, what feels culturally early. But yet now we're less than 2 weeks from Christmas and we haven't got a tree yet. The only Christmas decorations at our house right now are little Christmas gnomes sitting around our house.
Somehow I hated those gnomes last year, and now they're cozy.
They're adorable.
I even got one for Jenny in Estonia last week. So
I'm trying not to be too, you know, they won't infest the house, but they're adorable.
I would say, cute. I would say they have, but for some reason I don't mind now.
There's only three.
But I think that's coming back to this whole idea of the disruption and this white martyrdom is also all of the connecting points that you're used to. Mm-hmm. I mean, when Thanksgiving isn't a holiday and the day after Thanksgiving is not a day off of work, mm-hmm. and we're hosting people and getting ready for our team Thanksgiving, which we did on Saturday instead of on Thursday, mm-hmm. those day markers are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so then added to that, I mean, and our son is off at school for these times, coming home on weekends. Mm-hmm. And so added to all of this is, when do we do things together as a family?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you guys were experiencing that this last weekend with a tree tradition.
Right, yeah. Right. Heading off to buy our Christmas tree a couple of weeks later than we normally do, but trying to wait until we were actually all together again mm-hmm. as a family. And even then, we're not all together because mm-hmm. Johanna is still mm-hmm. in the U.S. Yes. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have certain Christmas movies we usually watch every year, and we have not, I mean,
our movie pattern has changed because the last
of them yet? We've watched some movies.
We won, I think.
Yeah, I don't, yeah,
just one, but it was new to you, so it wasn't part of the tradition yet.
Yeah,
so yeah, just because our normal patterns have shifted, even our like weekly patterns have shifted because of the holiday season and things happening and schedules changing. They were like, oh, we can't even do a normal thing because it's so different. So what is even, I think that's part of that transition feeling of we're still transitioning, even though we've lived here and things aren't as unexpected. And it's, so there's still that sense of loss, mm-hmm. Of confusion.
I think another piece for me has to do with, so because we're in fundraised roles, and in a fundraised organization, you know, this time of year is one of the big pushes to try to, encourage people to connect with their giving with what we're doing. and I don't like it. Mm-hmm. You know, like personally, like I don't like it. I actually don't mind being on the other side of that so much. It is a fun time to give. I think there's something for me. I don't know. I really try to fight against reducing relationships to, you know, to merely fundraising relationships. And I think the pressure to try to connect with so many people in such a short time, even if it's just writing postcards or whatever, but, you know, just little things of trying to intentionally connect and remind people that we are connected. And maybe part of that's because we never actually did develop a habit of sending Christmas letters.
It's a new thing that we're doing.
Yeah, it's a new thing. So in that way, it feels disingenuous. And I think there's this, this feel of maybe it strikes at a little bit of the joy for me in this season.
I think it is a different position too, and trying to maintain relationships and not turn all relationships into giving, but at the same time understanding that some people are on the other side that you were just mm-hmm. talking about. I like being on the other side. I want to know how to give, but it is hard. It's hard to not feel like you're turning friendships into some kind of transactional thing. Mm-hmm. Jenny, you've added some, I don't know, old new traditions. You're singing in a choir this year mm-hmm. for Christmas.
Yeah, and that, like, even talking about patterns, like, you know, as musicians, Christmas is always packed full of stuff, you know, up until, you know, could even be the day before or Christmas, like, so full. And that has been challenging to move back into. I have enjoyed the singing. It feels very familiar. Even preparing music that's I know, but in a different language, it's fun. It adds some joy to that part of me. But then transitioning into like, oh, I'm giving up my whole Sunday afternoon now, and my Saturday, or like an extra day, or like the change. Yeah, I value pretty highly being able to let down and being like, okay, I don't have to go anywhere. Like, we can all be here. Don't think I realized how highly I value that. So sometimes too much, right? Like, there's definitely a fault in me where I can value it too much. So it was like, oh, I think I enjoy singing, even on a Sunday. I think I enjoy it. Like, yeah, where I, you know, I gave up my nap. So I guess I like it. Yeah. So, but it was a lot of fun. And it's been a fascinating experience. I don't know the people very well yet that I'm singing with. So it's fascinating to, we're singing a lot of very gospel oriented song, and not gospel like
the Black Gospel Choir.
Right. Not that, but just, yeah, the lyrics are very Bible gospel centered. And so it's fascinating to be singing this and being like, do they know this? Like, maybe, like, they seem very familiar with the words, so it's not new, but I just don't know at what level they're taking it in. And yeah, it's just been an interesting experience as we sing this Little Light of Mine, which it's a gospel-y song in this one, but yeah, talking about the Holy Spirit and his power, you know, and things like that. And I'm like, this is fascinating to me. Like, I just don't know, how is this hitting them?
Right, or is it just music, right? Mm-hmm. Especially, I mean, one of the things we noticed last year was, and you mentioned this earlier, but the difficulty of finding a nativity scene. Although I did notice this year, so what are those things called with the candles and the little pyramids, and they've got the fan on top, right, that spins things. So there's a giant one of those at Alexanderplatz at the Christmas market, and I realized that kind of facing toward Chibo, there is actually a nativity scene up in the pyramid, which I hadn't noticed before.
And a lot of the Christmas markets have them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like although we have not succeeded in finding very many that weren't like $500.
Well, right. I mean, a lot of them have the big nativity scenes on display mm-hmm. at the Christmas markets, but mm-hmm. to buy one is different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the feeling that there is a lot of Christmas here that doesn't have particularly spiritual connotation, that it's, you know, it's a super nostalgic time of year. But the the spiritual meaning of it is not. Oh, what somebody was talking recently about, they had met an angel, somebody who was dressed up at a Christmas party.
Yeah.
They were dressed up as an angel, but they made clear when they were talking with one of our interns, they made it really clear that that they were a Christmas market angel, not a Christian angel. So fascinating, right?
Well, and there are also fascinating differences between West German and East German language. Like, so the Santa Claus, the Weihnachtsmann, is absolutely not an East German thing. It was a West German thing. The East Germans had Christkind, which was an angel, but it's super deceiving as a language learner because it's really the word Christ and the word for child crammed together. And when you're singing songs or reading traditions, you're thinking, oh, we're talking about Jesus, but you're not. You're talking about this mythological angel-like creature, Christkind, that comes and gives gifts, just like Santa Claus does. And so it's just really weird to me that in the East they had an angel and in the West they had Santa Claus, and both of them kind of pushed Jesus to the margins in their traditions. It's strange.
And then you have the words, right? At the choir concert, the words that are really deep and rich with meaning, but yeah, is there a connection there or not?
Right.
And the same thing in different ways, I think to different degrees is also true back home, right? Mm-hmm. There's plenty of people interacting with the words of Christmas, but not necessarily with the meaning of it.
Jenny, were your choir experiences, I don't know, in the last 5-10 years, were they more church choir or community choir?
Church.
So that's a bit of a difference too, singing Christian songs, Christmas carols with a group of Christians.
Yeah, I think I expected to sing more non-religious Christmas songs than we are, but I think I haven't figured out who gets to choose the music. Is it the director or is there some committee in the choir that picks music? I don't know that yet, because I think there's committees. I've been paying attention to the choir culture in our choir. Well, anyways,
the Verein culture, right?
Who's in charge? I don't know, but so it's just interesting to be singing differently, not with something that's connected with church, but singing more church songs.
I was noticing that listening to my Apple playlist Christmas songs. I mean, just play me Christmas music. How many of the English Christmas carols have nothing to do with religion? And yet most of the German Christmas carols seem to. There's a lot about snow or Christmas trees or the Christkind, but there are a ton of the traditional songs that they sing at Christmas because it's tradition are just loaded with deep theological meaning.
Beautiful.
And it was, I think, so, you know, talking about that we were talking some about the loss, there's also these interesting new exciting gains, right? Like Jenny's choir was singing what is the Gendarmenmarkt Christmas market?
That was a loss for me this year too. Was the Gendarmenmarkt?
But now Jenny's song at Babelplatz, right, where the book burning was. Like, I mean, it's like, wow! Like, this is a
with the city opera as your backdrop,
right? Yeah, it's a cool.
Yeah,
it's a cool memory to add. But I think even that, like that's not shared with family, right? That's the kind of thing that. There's a number of family members that would have loved to be at an event like that, standing around and, you know, drinking the hot beverages out of the mugs, right? Just, it's very nostalgic feeling, but it's like, oh, there are people missing here that were we doing this in the U.S. would probably make an effort to be there.
Which was definitely fun to look out and see. Mike and Alyssa and Steven, I didn't know. I thought maybe Mike, you and Alyssa were going to be there, but I didn't know Stephen was coming. So I was like, wait, there are people I know. It's not just strangers. That was really nice. So thanks.
Yeah.
Surprise.
I think of traditions as well. That so 16 years of pastoring in the U.S., Christmas Eve, especially for the 10 years in Staples, was never exactly a calm event for us. It was always Christmas Eve service and all the preparation and getting ready for that. And then usually as soon as Christmas Eve service was done, it was back to the house and get everything packed. We had to have things packed in advance, but load everybody up into the car and then drive a couple of hours down to the cities, and then we'd spend the night at Alyssa's family and then do Christmas Day there. And as chaotic as that was, we're 10 years in and I still feel weird on Christmas Eve because that was such a part of our tradition and had everything to do with extended family and how do we get to spend time with them. And now Christmas Eve is, we're trying to develop our traditions as Envision Berlin. But like you were saying earlier, it's different this year because there's more of us and trying to figure out how that works is.
Yeah. And even we were wrestling through, like, is it required for people to be there? Can you, are you allowed to take vacation? You know, what is Christmas Eve and Christmas the only day of the year you're not allowed to take vacation? Which we decided that wasn't the right answer, you know? So it's like, but this, yeah, this question, what is expectation and what is kind of freedom to participate? And yeah, how do you establish new traditions when you, when there's this feeling of like, well, like if I left my own devices, I would not choose to get together with other people on this day. Like, I don't know. I mean, even Christmas parties in general are just not really my thing. I'm happy to not be at them. But at the same time, there's something so good and important about being with other people in those spaces. And so, yeah, how do you create the space, create the expectation, and also give freedom to not be there?
And make sure no one's alone, right? Like in a way that they're suffering alone.
Right.
That you're caring for the people that you're around. And yeah, back to that sense of like sacrificial caring, like in a way that I think I would say I would want to be that way in back in the States. But I think, I don't know, there's a shift in like, well, we aren't just caring for our family, which it sort of feels like you get a pass for that in the States a little bit. You're like, well, now's the time for your family so you can go. And we did a little bit with, we had some college students over around Thanksgiving sometimes. And I know there are definitely people that do that often and include a lot of people. But I think that's been a shift and a change and something we're trying to figure out as far as the culture of our family of like, oh, what does it mean to be our family, but the broader sense of family? And I think we're also discussing that as a site, which has been really interesting and just feeling the struggle of wanting to be sacrificial in that way and then teaching our kids to figure that out too.
Well, I think we do so much for other people leading up to the holidays that when we get to the holiday, there's this sense of pleasant retreat. And finally, it's me and my family together. And and when our work now is a little bit different, it could be different, making sure how are we there, especially at times when people feel like they're away from our family. There's a cost to that. And that means we're not there with our family in the way we want to be.
It's like pointed out in a different way. We're reminded again that we're not going to be with family. We're reminded again, oh no, we're caring for people, which is good. But yeah, that struggle.
Well, we're not only not with our family in the States, but we can't be with our family here the way we would maybe prefer to be.
Right, yeah.
Which to any interns that are listening does not mean we don't value you. It's just the things we're...
No, it's the opposite, right? It's like because we value you, we're not being with our own selves in the way that we maybe would choose to be. Yeah.
For me, it's helpful when I frame this in cruciform lifestyle taking place in yet a different setting. Because I think it gives me... We had a conversation about another situation where sometimes it's just helpful to have the right boxes to put things in and say, okay, I don't necessarily like this situation, but now I can place this in this box and to say, hey, this is part of the calling that God has placed on our lives is helpful for me to try to frame that. What it doesn't do is necessarily make it easier.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it makes it easier to manage, but it doesn't take away the hardness of it.
Well, and I think even thinking about, you know, when we think about managing and, you know, trying to figure out where stuff fits, I think, you know, I've been reminded over and over again, I mean, in part of because our creative challenge that we did recently talking about generosity, but like, where am I drawing my strength? Where am I saying, well, no, I have enough? And if I keep looking back to myself to be like, I keep coming back empty, like I don't have enough to give what feels like extra, or I don't have enough But if I am saying no, if I'm listening to God and he's constantly saying, no, you have enough, I am enough, I am with you, you know, look to me instead of yourself. Like, that's a hard, I've been reminded over and over of that aspect of generosity and sacrifice and giving. And
I think, you know, the saying hindsight is always 20/20, or the grass is always greener. I mean, I think we have these sayings that kind of help us think the fact that, oh, maybe we're thinking, oh, it wasn't it great when, even the Israelites coming out of Egypt, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. can't we just go back where we sat around pots of meat all day and had cucumbers and melons, you know, I mean, and so what are some things that as you look back and look at what you have now, even just a year and a half in, what are some things where you're saying, you know, actually, this has given me an opportunity to do something different in a good way when it comes to Christmas traditions?
First, one of the things that I definitely feel like I left behind is getting to smoke our turkey for Thanksgiving. So that would be the pot of meat I left, you know, because we every year smoke the turkey on the grill, and I just, oh man, I miss that. Just, yeah. That's the opposite of what you asked.
No, but it's still a loss. That's a loss. Maybe just to give some space for you guys to think, since I'm springing the question on you. For me, pastoring a church around Christmas time is so challenging because you have not only are you fighting the pressure to not preach the same Christmas message that you preached last time, even though that's what people want to hear. They also don't want to hear the same. So mm-hmm. repackaging Christmas or representing different aspects of the Christmas mm-hmm. story in one of the more highly attended times of year is a mm-hmm. challenge. Mm-hmm. The pressure from the choir, the children's program, everybody that wants to make sure they get representation in a service of some way so that they can create memories for the people mm-hmm. that they're doing the ministry for and fulfill their desires for tradition is challenging. And it's just the additional community things that you have to be involved in. If you're trying to be a pastor that's connected to the community, mm-hmm. Kids programs at school, Christmas concerts. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many
endless.
Things.
There's it's an endless number of things to do.
And so especially in the last couple of years here, it's been, oh, that's really different for me now. I mean, goodness gracious, mm-hmm. Alyssa and I are just coming off of 10 days of vacation. We were gone for 2 Sundays in December.
Right before Christmas?
It's like unheard of, right? Yeah. And so there is a sense there where it's like, oh, okay. There are some benefits, some things that I'm not stressing about that I used to stress about. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, so one thing that cuts both ways is we don't have to worry about meeting family expectations of whether we're with the right family on the right days for the right number of days, you know, those kinds of things. It felt like, you know, there's always this sense that you're letting somebody down no matter how you decide things. And here we're letting everybody down equally. And so I think there's a, you know, not having to make those decisions in some ways is, you know, there's a little bit of a sense of relief there. I think there's, of course, then the loss that you don't get to make the decisions and of course, all the positive sides of that we're clearly missing out on. Something that we're definitely gaining here that I really enjoy is the Christmas markets. I'll find reasons to walk through a Christmas market, even though that's not what I'm doing. Like I went to the sporting goods store recently to pick something up, and it's close enough to a Christmas market that I walked through and picked up some cooked mushrooms, which were amazing. And I'm the only one in our family that likes them, and so I did that by myself.
Mm-hmm. Christmas markets are a great time to get that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then it was close enough to another Christmas market that I walked through it as well, just because it was there. And I think that's something that I really enjoy, and I don't remember there being anything quite like that in the U.S., so that's something that's added for me that I really enjoy.
I think for me, there's the other days other than Christmas. Yeah, St. Nicholas Day, St. Martin's Day, like it's just so fascinating, the different traditions that are very geared towards loving your neighbor and paying attention to your neighbor or celebrating together as a community. It's just different. I wouldn't say one is better or another, but I think I've appreciated the change in perspective. I think just stepping out of, like, there's a sense of Christmas here that feels similar enough to where, like, you recognize Christmas. But then I think all of the other things, you're like, oh, I didn't think about celebrating that, or that that is something that the culture values, whether they live it out on a daily life or are just reminded. I mean, that's a point of celebrating. I think some is just to be reminded of what we want to value. Yeah. So I've enjoyed that. And even the kids, it's something that they, you know, our youngest cleaned his shoes, stuck him out, and look forward to the chocolate Santa and, you know, the orange and whatnot. Yeah. So it feels, yeah, enjoyable to get a different perspective on the holiday season in general.
I think something else that I have gained, you know, by changing professions is that when I was a full-time prof, the time in between the two semesters, particularly at the college I taught at most recently, it was finishing grading and prepping for the next semester. And there really wasn't a lot of time between. The college I taught at first had a longer window in between, and that was more relaxed. But for the last, you know, 8-10 years before we came here, it was a busy time for me. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was also this sense that I was always letting people down because I was supposed to be celebrating with them, but I had to work because.
And aren't you on vacation now? Like, oh gosh, come on. Why are you bringing your books on vacation?
Yeah. I still feel some of the trigger of that. So. Yeah.
Wait till you go on home assignment.
You had a nice vacation, right?
Yeah. Great. Yeah. I had one guy at a market here. I go to the same markets every week. And so one of the guys, it was like, Mike, you were gone for 4 months. Who gets so much vacation? I'm like, dude, I mean, he has no clue, but it triggered me because I kept hearing, I'm like,
no.
That wasn't anything but vacation.
I do think one thing that, and another thing that we've gained. So something that I really care about is telling stories. And so, like, even in the podcast episode that we'll release this week for the Profs and Rooms podcast, I feel like the story that we're able to tell in our Advent episode this year is different because we're here. Like, the perspectives that I have access to and some of the experiences that I've had, like, I think I definitely feel like some of the conversations I'm able to have, not only with people here, like interns and residents and short-term teams coming through, but also, you know, through the media, like the podcasts and other things that we're working on, there is access to inviting people into something that matters in a way that I don't know that I had before. I think that's something that I really appreciate.
I think if we were to kind of just wrap everything up and say, hey, look at this. Lucky you guys, it's been a long time. You get an hour long episode of of the podcast. Is maybe a reminder that this call to take up our cross and follow Jesus is not something that's unique to people who are in the ministry or who are living overseas. It's really a call that God's given to all of us. And this call is not, it's extraordinary, but not meant to be extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain things whereas we're thinking of giving to other people, the idea of saying, you know what, Jesus gave everything for us and I'm giving my life in return to him so that he can live through me. And really this is not, it feels like a sacrifice. It feels like a martyrdom, but really it's Christ in us, our hope for glory.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And there's this wonderful peace and strength that comes through that. And the calling that God has, this white martyrdom that God has on some people to live out this in a foreign culture is not always easy, but it's also not without rewards, both temporary and long-term. It doesn't mean that there's not suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting to me, again, is that the Celtic Christians really saw this sailing away. Now, for them, it was much more permanent in nature. You weren't coming back. You couldn't send an email. There was no Zoom calls or instant connection over Facebook, so you could still stay connected with people. Mm-hmm. But it was a higher sense of martyrdom, because you were living that extreme sense of separation and death on a regular daily basis. But I bet if you were to talk to most of them personally, when you're involved in the ministry, you feel that separation, but you also feel the rewards.
There is something too about the frozen grief of the way that we live now, where there is this sense that I can't quite mourn the end of those relationships, because I can just pick up my phone and call somebody, or I could get on an airplane and go see them. And so I can't mourn the end of it, but I'm also not experiencing the benefits of being in it. And that frozen grief, I think, does have a unique sense of cost to it. And I think it's particularly profound this time of year.
Yeah, when you think of the traditions that you were a part of, or, you know, I was reflecting on, you know, just the kind of cookies that we would make when we're together or whatever, like things like that. We feel things that connect through generations. There's that bittersweet sense of, oh, I'm so glad that I can still do this, but that reminds me of the lack of being together. Yeah, the lack of constant, or not constant relationship, but the lack of presence of bodily relationship, you know, giving somebody a hug that you haven't seen for a while, or playing games and hearing people laugh, and yeah, that we don't get in the same way. Even if we do get to chat with them on the phone, the laughter isn't necessarily quite the same, or the spur of the moment conversations are different. And yeah.
Well, so to others who are serving and are away from their families and are overseas and living a life on mission far away from maybe where they would prefer to be at the holidays, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service and for your martyrdom. It sounds so extreme, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Thank you, I think. Yeah.
And at the same time, just an encouragement to embrace the new traditions that you're seeing mm-hmm. in the places where you're at. And I noticed with being on home assignment this last time, a strange switch for me when I was talking to people about Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the earth, that I felt more like the churches I was speaking in were my uttermost parts of the earth, and Berlin was my Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And so there is, even in this martyrdom, there are new roots that are put down, and it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Tracks Cultures. If you enjoyed our conversation and want to dive deeper, we invite you to join our community on Discord. It's a space for sharing experiences, asking questions, and connecting with others who are navigating similar journeys. See the link in our show notes to become a part of our growing community. Your support means the world to us. If you'd like to help us continue our work as a creative community looking for the meeting place of faith, art, and culture, consider becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/envisionberlin to find out how you can contribute. Until next time, keep embracing change and embodying transformative hope for humanity.
This podcast was produced by Envision Berlin in our studios located in Berlin, Germany. If you'd like to send us a note, feel free to send your email to podcast@envisionberlin.com. Thanks for listening.